UK Wine Show, show number 30, Aged Semillon. G'day, and welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 30 for the 22nd of December. This week we're going to be talking to Phil Ryan about aged Semillons, and we're also going to be doing a vertical tasting of Mount Pleasant Semillons. Phil is the General Manager and Chief Winemaker at Mount Pleasant in Australia's Hunter Valley. What makes him a bit unusual is that they release the same wine three times. So it's easy to taste the current release, a young fresh Semillon, and then maybe a five-year-old vintage which has been re-released, and finally the same wine again 3 to 4 years earlier as well as a museum piece. I've had to shorten the interview quite a bit to fit it into the show, but there's a full interview which takes 25 minutes, and it's available on our website under the show notes. The full version includes more information about Mount Pleasant, and also we taste their Lovedale range of wines as well. Mount Pleasant has also been conducting screw cap trials now on their aged wines for over 40 years, so we touch on their experience with screw caps. But before we get into the news, I'd like to wish everybody a warm and happy Christmas, and then hopefully it all goes smoothly for you. And don't forget, the UK Wine Show is sponsored by 3050, the wine tasting company. Wine tastings are a great way for friends and family to get together and share your enthusiasm for wine. The tastings can be tailored to your requirements in terms of entertainment and learn something to boot. But next, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. There is certainly a case for investing in wine, according to new research by economists at the University of Wyoming. The paper investigated the returns that wine investors get. They collected hammer price data for auctions of red Bordeaux vintages ranging from 1883 to 1998. The auctions they studied took place from 96 to 2003, and they estimated risk-adjusted returns for individual wines. The results were amazing, considering that what investors really want is an asset that delivers healthy annual returns, but without much associated risk. Wine did just that. The economists found that wine investments have almost no correlation with the market as a whole, yet have high returns. The average annual return for those who invested in Bordeaux was between 7.5% and 9.5% higher than predicted. And as the paper concludes, if by chance one of your wine assets declines substantially in value, you can always exercise the option to consume and drink your Bordeaux. Meanwhile, the Australians aren't just making wine, they're also busy developing new types of containers to put it in. Last week, two new formats were unveiled. The first is Hardy's Shuttle, an acrylic bottle which is sealed by its own twist-top acrylic wine glass. It holds a single serving and is designed for use at events where glass is banned. The company's global marketing manager, Miriam Leenders, said the shuttles will keep for 12 months and is scheduled to be tested in the UK in March 2007. The second new format is the Cheer Pack from Palandry Wines in Western Australia. This is a plastic and aluminium foil pouch, similar to those used for fruit juice and yogurt drinks. Palandry's general manager, Andrew Blythe, told us the Cheer Pack can be made in any size and has been designed to be environmentally friendly. It has a shelf life of between 12 to 24 months, so again, it's for early drinking wine. Andrew said Palandry will be introducing the Cheer Pack to the UK in spring or summer of 2007. And finally, if you fancy a free pre-Christmas tipple on the way home from work, try taking the train. The Argento Wine Company is offering tastings of both Chardonnay and Malbec at London's Victoria Station, as well as Leeds and Manchester. This is part of a six-month campaign for the Argentinian brand, which will include sampling at consumer events around the country. Argento's general manager, Amelia Nolan, said the aim was to bring the brand and the quality of the wine to life and to take the risk out of buying by having the chance to taste. Under the banner Argento, the Real Argentina, the campaign was rolled out at the Spirit of Christmas Fair last month. Amelia said that so far the wines have been very well received. That's all for the news. Back over to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. Wine investment do appear to make good returns, but there's a lot of risk that you don't really see in the headline figure about prices of wine going up. There is a definite lack of regulation in the area, and there's a lot of fraudulent wine about. This year alone has seen a number of high-profile wine companies going bust. with wines that have been purchased on behalf of customers vanishing or being used to pay back those wine companies' creditors. For example, in April, London fine wine merchant Mayfair Cellars collapsed with a loss of hundreds of thousands of pounds, the victim of a massive internal fraud. A senior member of staff had fraudulently sold customers Bordeaux and Burgundies over the course of 4 years to an estimated value of £1.25 million. The wines were sold to two major London wine merchants, and the proceeds were pocketed after being siphoned out of the company coffers. Another example is Vintage Hallmark PLC, which I think can be best described as pure scam, and they went bust owing £80 million. The victims in this case were mainly American doctors, who were impressed by Vintage Hallmark's London shop in the prestigious St. James Street. The second type of problem is fake wines. For example, a billionaire Florida collector is suing German collector and dealer Hardy Rodenstock for fraud. A suit filed in the New York federal court recently stems from purchases of a 1784 and 1787 Chateau Lafite and a 1784 and 1787 Chateau Brune-Mouton. But it's not only the very old wines from Bordeaux that have been fraudulently sold. It's been reported recently that some of Australia's top wines are in fact fake as well. I think Serena Sutcliffe from Sotheby's best described it in February when she said there is a horrifying increase in fraud at the very top end of the trophy wine market. So, you have been warned, it is often unregulated, there is significant credit risk, and you may not be getting what you think you're buying in the end anyway. So, bon appetit if you're into wine investing. Next is the interview with Philip Ryan, General Manager and Chief Winemaker at Mount Pleasant in Australia's Hunter Valley. Hi, I'm here with Phil Ryan. He's the General Manager and Chief Winemaker at Mount Pleasant. How are you, Phil?
Well, thanks, Chris.
Just thought we'd touch on a wee bit about Mount Pleasant, and because you're actually part of McWilliams, aren't you?
That's right. Mount Pleasant is a wholly owned subsidiary of McWilliams Wines. Mount Pleasant dates back as a vineyard to about 1860 or so. Developed as a winery by the brand Mount Pleasant by Maurice O'Shea. And by 1940, McWilliams had purchased the company from Maurice O'Shea, but he stayed on as general manager and winemaker and chief winemaker.
So we're in sunny New South Wales here in Hunter Valley. What's so special about Hunter Valley?
Well, the Hunter Valley is a wonderful place. It's got great lifestyle, of course, but it has a very unique viticultural aspect. And we found Semillon and Shiraz in particular just found their home here over the last 170 years or so. It is a natural valley. The valley is about 180 kilometres wide and about 200 kilometres deep, just north of Sydney, only a two-hour drive up the track. It has a unique aspects and climate here, which does help in producing these classic age wines.
What are those aspects?
We, in the afternoons here, we do get a lot of cloud cover, so we have a natural cooling effect from the ocean. We have quite dry winters leading into relatively dry spring, so the opposite of most viticultural areas. But we do get glorious sunshine through the spring and summer. Our grapes ripen very quickly and produce wonderful flavours.
I've spoken to a few people in the past and read a wee bit about Hunter Valley, and they say you get sort of rain during picking. Is that a major hassle?
Well, it is. It keeps you honest. The great thing about winemakers say if you can make wine in the Hunter Valley, you can make wine anywhere in the world, because all the viticultural challenges are here during the growing season.
Okay. And New South Wales has got some new areas that are really starting to open up now, aren't they?
Lots of things happening in New South Wales, right along what we call the Great Dividing Range, which is the mountain range which goes from Victoria up into Queensland. Very ancient soils, and we're seeing places like Orange, into hilltop areas around Young, Tumbarumba, Cowra, and a few others where these along this mountain range producing really exciting styles of wine.
The reason we're here really is to get our head around Hunter Valley Semillon. It's not always been called Semillon, has it?
No, it's had a very long, checkered and really confusing background. We looked at our first English settlers here, and we believe they sourced Semillon as cuttings from South Africa around Constantia, where Semillon had been planted about 200 years earlier by the Dutch. And when it arrived in Australia, it had lost its name viticulturally and was called here Shepherd's Riesling, named after the first nurseryman in Sydney in the Darling Harbour area. And from there it came into the Hunter Valley as Shepherd's Riesling. And later on its name was changed to Hunter Valley Riesling. And it wasn't until about 1960 that we actually discovered that we weren't growing a form of Riesling at all. We were growing actually Semillon. So Riesling was a name it had for over 100 years. And coupled with that, we even called it Chablis, Hock and White Burgundy. So well, we've done everything possible to confuse everybody about the stuff.
You guys are known for aging your Semillons. What's going on with Semillon as it ages? And we're going to taste a couple of Semillons in a moment.
Well, the joy of Semillon is it's a variety which does lend itself to bottle aging. And right through its whole life, from a very young pup, when it's first made, it has this incredible freshness and limey, zesty, citrus aromas and flavours. And as it matures, it just develops into something unique in the wine world. No one else can produce a style of wine like what Semillon can do in bottle aging. This is all done without any oak interference. It's just purely a wine that's fermented in tank and then bottled. And then over the next 10, 20 years even, or even longer, the wine ages and matures gracefully. And the flavours just grow and grow, and they become nothing like what the wine starts. So it has a great path.
Your Mount Pleasant Elizabeth, you were talking earlier about it being released at quite different times. Can you just walk through? Let's taste these.
Well, we should start with the 2005, which is our young, what we call our classic Semillon. And that is, if you like, the baby Elizabeth, if you like. It's not sold as Elizabeth, but it's just a very current vintage, young, fresh, and it's all that limey, zesty characters. On the nose, there's even hints of herbaceousness there, mm-hmm. grassy hints, etc.
Yeah, you can almost confuse it as a savvy from a warm climate.
Exactly, Sauvignon Blanc, that draws you to the wine. I love these aromas, they're magnificent with food, and also it's a great wine as an aperitif.
We're fatter than the mouth than the Sauvignon.
Yes, and that is the exactly what Semillon will deliver, because it has much more flavour construction on the palate than Sauvignon Blanc. People who blend Semillon with Sauvignon Blanc do that to get the best of Semillon, which gives the Sauvignon Blanc the foundation and the breadth and the more fruit flavour.
Let's try the next one.
We now go to our current release, Elizabeth. This is a five-year-old wine, and this has been the company philosophy to give our Semillon some bottle age before we release it. So these wines are bottled straight after production. After they finish fermentation, they go from tank into bottle, and then they're matured in our cellars for up to 4, 5, 6, even longer years to allow these flavours to develop. You see the colour has changed now. There's a slight more deepening yellow. There's still that lime, sort of a greenish tinge in the wine, which again speaks of quality. And the aroma is now very vastly different to what we've looked at in the first wine. Yeah. You're now seeing nuts and toast and honey and lanolin. Again, the palate is mouth-filling. Lovely crisp acidity that finishes these wines, and that acidity that keeps these wines alive.
It tastes like there's no malolactic in there. Has it had malolactic?
We avoid that like the plague. Malolactic in a Semillon actually destroys the structure of the wine, and it flattens it and dulls the wine. The important thing that with Semillon is we pick it as a variety quite early. It's picked at about 10 or 11 Beaumé, which results in about 10 or 11% alcohol. So the wines are relatively low in alcohol, which means you can drink more, which is a pretty positive thing. But this acidity is the key to these wines producing these lovely fresh flavours, lovely zingy flavours.
Okay, and the next wine is the
1997, which we now call the Museum Elizabeth. So what we've done is the same wine as the previous one. It just is held in bottle, stored for a longer period of time. We release most of the wine, and a few thousand cases are kept back for that final release as a museum wine. This, again, is show that there's life after the first release. The wine still has further maturation to undergo and still is developing. It would suit different sorts of food.
The acidity is still there, but it's not as lively. Mm-hmm. It's really toned down a wee bit, hasn't it?
And the palate is very soft, and it's almost gives the impression of slight sweetness. All these wines are bone dry. What that is just the further development of the wine gives it a broader and more developed, almost a honey, a concentrated honey character again.
It's not as crisp as the other wines, is it? So something I've never really got my head around is winemakers always tell me the pH level or the acidity of the level doesn't change, or even the total acidity doesn't change. But as wines get older, they always feel like they're losing that acidity. What's going on there?
Yeah, this is, again, the great joy of Semillon, that it retains its freshness. As I said earlier, we pick this wine when they are lower in sugar than most varieties, so you have a higher natural acidity in the grapes. Also in the grapes, in the juice, this means that the pH, which is a chemical term, which is sort of more or less a measure of acidity, is a very low level of pH. So that tells you then there's a crispness in the juice. There's natural inbuilt prevention of oxidation due to this low pH, and also prevents microbial spoilage. So the wine has in it, if you like, inbuilt guards against some of the reasons that wines will prematurely age or be spoilt bacterially. So the natural acidity and the low pH are two very key ingredients into producing a wine which will then mature, as you see with these wines here. The next wine we're looking at is a 1994. So this has been in bottle 12 years. And again, that low pH and that naturally high acidity has kept that wine in and allowed it to age so beautifully. Very concentrated toast character.
The toast is coming through a lot more now than maybe the other ones. Mm-hmm. Honeyness isn't as much either, though.
No.
I'd expect the wine to get more and more honeyed as it gets older. There's definitely a good colour change from the young 2005 through to the 12-year-old. It's a Museum Elizabeth 1994,
again,
isn't it?
Again, they're very attractive colours too, aren't they? They're really...
quite bright.
Very bright, yeah. The wines actually have a real... they're almost luminous now. They're lovely, bright shine to them.
Yeah. Reminds me of a Saturday morning after a hard night out. I suppose I'm not allowed to say that.
Yeah, I can share that with you. Yeah, you're right.
How long do you think Semillon is good to last for?
Well, we don't know. And in the past, Semillon has been controlled by the method of closure. And I believe now we're moving into screw cap with these wines. There is potential for these wines to, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years. Who knows?
Okay. Do you think you need to give them a minimum aging? They're tasting quite nice young. They're a very different wine after 7-8 years in bottle.
Exactly. I don't like to dictate the age of the wine you should drink it. Semillon has such potential to drink it at so many different ages because the flavours are all changing. So it becomes a choice. People who like mature wines have an opportunity here to buy a Semillon and mature it in their cellars and watch it age and see the different flavours as they emerge over a long period of time. Or you can buy it as a young, fresh, upfront, fruit-driven wine and just sit out there in the sun and have it with a great plate of seafood, or prawns or oysters or whatever. These wines suit food so beautifully.
Yeah, we had I had your Elizabeth the other night with some seafood and it was yummy. What about getting back to screw caps though? Like screw caps, obviously they don't let oxygen in, unlike a cork. So the wine is going to age differently.
It certainly does, and it is more controlled. You think about technology and where we've come in our lifetimes, and how many changes we've seen. You know, we talked about computers and all this sort of thing. That's all in recent time. Cork has been a method of closure for bottles for 350 years. So in 350 years, we have done a lot of things to develop technologies which will certainly support packaging food. Wine is a food, so why shouldn't we use new concepts? And screw cap allows the has permeability of oxygen, surely has, but very slow, and the wines mature more evenly and more gracefully. Cork, as it gets older, as a natural product, it will slowly collapse.
The screw caps really have been around for the consumer for the last 5 years, perhaps. Have you done any trials earlier or anything like that?
Yes, the screw cap was invented by the French back in the 60s, so it's been around a long time. And we've been trialling screw caps since 1968, so we've had a pretty good handle on these wines. But the only problem we had when we launched screw cap, the consumers weren't interested in seeing it in premium wines. So happy to see it in the lower end products, but not in premium wines. In more recent years now, those consumers now are more wine savvy. They've come through several decades of wine consumption, and they can see the benefits of a seal which will retain the freshness and the flavour in the wine rather than having a problem with possible cork taint or possible oxidation issues.
Okay, so you've been trialling this now for 40 years almost.
40 years. We're very comfortable with it. We know it works.
And, yeah.
But it is a marketing issue. And you can have the best invention in the world, but if you can't sell it, there's not much good to you. So we've had to slowly sell this and promote it and show people the benefits of using a different method of closure.
A lot of people I speak to about screw caps, they talk about, yeah, it's great for young, fresh wines, but the jury's out on aging wines on it. Mm-hmm. You guys age Semillons, and you're quite happy with it as well. So, interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's like everything else. There's going to be new closures now invented. Now we're over the cork hurdle now. I think you'll see a lot of other products coming onto the market in the years ahead. Mm-hmm. So our children and their children, they're going to have a wonderful future in wine. Their wines are going to be of an exemplary standard. Every bottle is going to be, will mature beautifully, I'm sure.
I've seen a lot of Sauvignon Blanc, Semillons blends as I've been moving through Australia. Mm. What's going on there? I notice you guys don't seem to have a Savvy Semillon blend here.
I find those wines absolutely delicious, but we concentrate on making that style of wine, Semillon, Sauvignon Blancs, SSBs we call them, particularly over in Western Australia, Margaret River. Ideal place there where you get the intense gooseberry characters of the Sauvignon Blanc, and then it's supported then by the lovely richness of the citrus and the grapefruit from the Semillon. So the Semillon then becomes, if you like, the foundation of the wine, and then the Sauvignon Blanc sits on top with all those wonderful aromas. Here in the Hunter Valley, we don't get those characters as a young wine, and there is some herbaceousness and gooseberry characters there, but the terroir of the Hunter Valley really does support just making straight Semillons, where you allow the wine to express itself as it does. You've seen here these young wines, and then you see how it then grows in the bottle over a period of time. And blending it with a Sauvignon Blanc from another area is not really the way to go with making this classic style. We're looking at strictly making classic Hunter Valley Semillon, which has a unique place in the world of wine, and it doesn't need Sauvignon Blanc, whereas certainly other areas, those fresh gooseberry characters mixed with some Semillon, delicious drink.
Yeah, so the Semillon's finding a bit of fatness and width in the palate, and you're getting that upfront punch with the Savvy.
So yeah, exactly. And they're the perfect partnership, those two, particularly we're very excited by the styles we're getting out of Margaret River, and they're very, very popular styles, and the two varieties just interblend magnificently, and they all the attributes of freshness and upfront aromas, and then down below you've got that nice rich palate structure which gives it the flavour.
What about selling Semillon? Do you find it's tricky selling it? Whenever I'm in the UK, you talk to an Aussie in the wine industry and they go, oh, Hunter Valley Semillon, you know, it can't get better than that, but then you never see anything that's older than, you know, the current vintage.
And yes, Semillon is definitely a hard sell, no question of that. It's a hand sell. Things are happening with Semillon internationally now. We're getting much better response. People who visit Australia come to the Hunter Valley, taste the wines. They go back with a whole new idea of what these wines are. And we are certainly doing much better now in our sales, particularly in the UK. The UK market has grown tremendously in the last few years because, again, they're getting away from possibly Australian Chardonnay, looking at what else is out there.
Yeah.
And we're poised there really with a great product which will meet that marketplace.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much for taking the time to see us, Phil.
Yeah, thank you. Pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Phil. Phil was great to talk to, and I felt that during the tasting I'd learnt quite a bit about Semillon and aged Semillon as well. And I hope this interview has sparked your interest in Semillon. Next week, in preparation for all your New Year's resolutions, we're interviewing Roger Cordaire, the man behind The Wine Diet. A new book out in the last couple of weeks. The Wine Diet is not some fatty diet, but a good look at health and the benefits of wine and how to get the most out of your life by drinking wine. So until then, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show was brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show was produced by Jane Scott and recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news was read by Jane Scott and researched by Sandra Clement. The music for the UK Wine Show is Grifter Jingle 1 by Marcel de la Jartelle and Silence by Etoile Noire.